Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us here on Three Women, Three Ways. We are the radio show that gives you everything from talk about politics and healthcare and women's issues and domestic violence, and we all do it from our own perspectives. There are three of us here. Let me introduce to you Deborah Adams, and she can tell you a little bit about herself. Deborah?
Hey, thanks, Heather. Good morning, world. We are excited to talk today. A little bit about me is I have worked in the anti-violence against women field for almost 20 years. And while I was doing that, I completed a bachelor and master's degree. So my little tagline is that I have lived it as a survivor, I have studied it, and I've worked it. So I'm going to pass it over to our other diva, Miss Pinkley Connie Sue.
Well, good morning, ladies, and good morning, listeners. This is Connie Sue. I'm also known as the Pink Lady, and that derives from a very spiritual place of healing from my experience with domestic violence about 15, 16 years ago. So I am a survivor. I have worked also in the field for the last 15 years, and I'm currently in a local nonprofit here in Thurston County domestic violence and sexual assault agency, and I'm currently the program director. So I think I have a few credentials there to talk about anti-violence against women. Heather, what about you? Tell us a little bit about you this morning.
Well, I have a similar take to Deborah, and that is the academic take. My little slogan, Deborah, is I was a victim, I was a survivor, and now I'm an expert. Because
all right.
I went to school as an older woman, and I got a master's degree, and that focused in domestic violence. And now, for the last 2 years, I've been working on a PhD, and I am just about ready to start my dissertation, and my dissertation is going to be on the effects of domestic violence experience on women's long-term work satisfaction, job satisfaction.
Good
so
job.
I'm kind of excited about that, and of course I'm the lady that loves the studies, so I'm the person that really loves to do the research and look at the studies and see what the latest thing is going on. And speaking of the latest things going on, we're ready to roll up our sleeves, aren't we, ladies?
Uh-huh.
We're going to talk politics today. We're going to talk about the candidate for president, their stances on women, and I got to tell you folks out in the audience that we would love for you to join us because this is going to be hot and heavy, and it's all going to be done in the spirit of friendship and love. Right now, Pinkley, why don't you start us off? Because you are, am I right in saying you're kind of a middle-of-the-road person?
Well,
speaking.
general stance in life is that I'm the peacemaker. So,
you run for president, please.
I generally like to avoid conflict, but in getting way better at addressing it with clear communication and a style of, I love this new mantra that I'm living by. I can be kind, but I don't always have to be nice.
Mm.
So that's really working well for me these days. Especially supervising and working with staff and direct services. However, I voted for Obama. My ballot's in. Where I stand on that is the fact that I think that President Obama has done an amazing job working with women's issues. I feel like Romney would set us back too far. And where we've gone, and we can talk about some of those issues. However, I think that I am disappointed in Obama with regards to our economy. I've not heard anything about the housing market. I think that's kind of like an old passé news and all the debates and whatnot that I've listened to. So I am personally affected by the housing market and what's happened in my own home. So I am a little bit disappointed about that. But I also think that President Obama walked into quite an economic disaster. So I am tending to go towards the care of women's issues. If we don't take care of the women in our country, who's going to?
Exactly.
So what about you, Heather? What's your stance?
Well, I'm going to be, I have a feeling, a lone woman out here. I did want to just say that when you're talking economics, you really are talking a woman's issue. Women suffer much more in a down economy than do men, mostly because they make less money. So for me, economics is a women's issue. And I'm going to vote for Romney, Mitt Romney, because he understands business, and not just from the government worker standpoint, but from real economic, you know, getting out there and doing it. And I think that he is for women. He's not particularly for abortion, but he doesn't mind. He doesn't want abortion to be a national issue. He wants it to go back to the states. Don't necessarily agree with that. However, for me, right now, the biggest issue for women is economics. And so I'm going with him because I think he would do a better job. And let me see. I guess that says it all. Now I have just bared my soul, Deborah.
Okay. Are you ready for me?
Okay. So I'm ready, I'm open, and let me have it.
Okay, and I want to say this. Anything I say is said with love and never meaning to hurt anybody's feelings. But I'm very proud of you, Connie Sue, for stating your position early on in our discussion, because that's not your general mode. And
well, and again, as we were preparing for this show, I think that if we weren't talking about this today, I wouldn't have done some of the research I did. So I want to put a plug out there for our listeners that the important thing is to be an informed voter and to do some research, go on the websites, look at the differences. And we're really encouraging people to vote. So this is an educational opportunity this morning where I think that we're all going to learn lots of new and different things. And I know that Deborah is very strong in her opinions. And we are here to support you, Deborah. So
even if you're wrong. No, I'm just saying that.
And I can be wrong. I admit that 100%, Heather. So you feel completely within your right to say when I'm wrong, and I'll stop to listen at least, I promise.
Okay. And
so
please,
I'm avidly,
and I'm really not stalling you, Deborah, really I'm not, but I want to put out a call there to our listeners. Give us a call. This is going to be a great discussion. We want to hear from you. 646-378-0430. Come and put in your 2 cents worth. Let us know what you think. Deborah?
Absolutely. So I am avidly, Mr. Barack Obama, he's the man for me. And his very first official act as president was to sign the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. That's the first bill he signed. I think
so that
is...
Explain that for our listeners, please.
Pardon me?
Explain what that bill is so that...
Oh, yes. So Lilly Ledbetter was a woman who worked, I believe, at... Was it Walmart?
I think it was.
I think she worked at Walmart, and she was in management, and she worked there for 25 years. And afterwards, she found out that she had been paid a considerably lower salary than men doing the same exact job as hers. So she... pursued a civil suit, I believe, saying that she had been discriminated against. And the issue was that there was a time limit on when you could, it was after she had been working for 25 years. So they said, your statute of limitations, your time limit's up, you can't do this. And so that's what really brought about the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. That it has to be once you become aware of it that statute time limitation comes into effect, because she didn't know until she had retired, I believe. Mm-hmm. So what that does is ensure that everybody has the right to have equal pay for equal work. And it's named after Lilly Ledbetter because hers is the case that, you know, initiated the whole thing. So that is the very first act that President Obama signed. And for me, that said volumes. And now that is talking about economic issues, Heather, I must say.
Yes,
and
definitely.
And I'm gonna jump in here and just say that that was in 2009
right.
when that occurred.
Right, so that's his first year.
Yeah.
But over, I want to also talk about some other things that he did that would, I think, resonate with a lot of listeners. In 2010, there was a $2 billion investment to lay off workers for education and career training programs in the community colleges to get people who were either, you know, downsized, laid off, or lost their livelihood. He had also, in the same year, $68 billion to expand Pell Grants and make it easier for students to repay outstanding loans after graduation. Now, I think both of those issues impacted women as far as economics, and those go in the plus column for me.
Yes, and they actually go in the plus column for me.
Yeah. And he also, in 2010, encouraged job creation by expanding investments in schools and clean energy projects. So schools and clean energy projects, those are very often high on a woman's list of priorities, particularly if we have children. So I think investing in schools and investing in clean energy work and to create jobs is a definite plus as far as women's economics. There's lots of other things he did as far as...
Deborah, can I just jump in a second?
Sure.
expand money to schools. You know, that's an issue that I have. And of course, I have children, and they went through public schools, and I think it's very important to give money to schools. However, to say that that's a priority over being able to have a roof over your head, I don't know that it is. Say that
agree. I don't say it's a priority over having a roof over your head, but it is a top priority.
I think that because our economic situation is so dire, our national debt, I mean, we don't have money. And me as an individual, as a household, you know, there are many, many things that I think are worthwhile, you know. I mean, braces for my child, that's really important. But if I can't make the mortgage payment, even though the braces are really important and they're really significant, I can't do it. Because I don't have the money. And I think that, unfortunately, that's exactly the way we have to look at our national economy. And just throwing money at things isn't necessarily addressing that issue. Okay. Balls
so I have a question for Heather.
Okay.
Heather, tell me, help educate me on the statement about keeping a roof over your head. How is Romney going to help you do that?
Romney's not going to make your mortgage payment, that's for sure.
Okay.
But Romney has a basic understanding of the economy. He's run businesses, and I think that really we ought to have everybody in the world do a, what do they call that in England, the gap year, where you go out and do service or travel or learn something about the world. I think we ought to do that with everybody in our country, too, only I think we need to have them learn about the real world. You know, learn about how to run a business and what the obligations are and what the commitments are and where that money actually goes. I think people who've never done that have an idea that there's just this money floating around and the big guy is just skimming it off and throwing it in his pocket. And especially since small businesses are the heart of this country, and that's just not the case. So I think that we need to really educate our people about, you know, what makes our economy run. And I think Mitt Romney, because of his work experience, knows that. He knows what makes our country run economically. And once we get our economic ducks in a row, then we can go back and deal with these other important issues, really important issues, and be able to afford to actually do a good job with them.
Well, I find that an interesting point of view. And I would definitely agree that Mitt Romney is an expert in personal business. But I don't know that he's an expert in country business. And
what do you mean by that?
My understanding is that, you know, candidate Mitt Romney has made a lot of his money in manufacturing, and that he has actually sent a lot of his manufacturing overseas. And that
outsourcing.
That does not help American U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
And if you're going to look at, you know, you've probably heard this, past behavior predicts future behavior. So if that's what he did to amass his amounts of personal wealth, and he's going to say, hey, that worked for me, so why don't I approach that on a countrywide level, and the whole U.S. will start outsourcing everything. So how is
that's minimizing things, Deborah. You know very well that outsourcing is something that's been going on for decades. Mitt Romney isn't personally responsible for that. And what good is it to have a company with jobs at home if the company goes under because it can't compete economically?
But how does that help U.S. citizens?
If it keeps the company open, it's helpful. Plus, there's always the potential for bringing those jobs back home, and I think we're starting to see that a little bit in our country. I think we're starting to see jobs coming back home little tiny bit at a time. So, yeah, I think that when you're talking like this about Mitt Romney, making it all about him, you know, I mean, I can say the same things about Obama. Obama is an expert at also helping Obama. He's not just some, totally selfless person up there. Obama's a very wealthy man. So how come we're not talking about his personal wealth like we're talking about Mitt Romney's personal wealth?
Because I believe that, this is just my opinion, and like I said, remember, it's said with love and respect.
Okay, all right. We'll have a love fest afterwards.
All right. We'll get some makeup. I don't disagree that everybody has to have their own personal objectives in life and create their own future. But I thought the United States was based on a principle that there was going to be equality or equity, however that looks, equity for all. And that, from my perspective, President Obama is he's a culturally sensitive person and a president, and he has the ability to have empathy for people and to show that in a way that's appropriate. And I don't know that Mitt's really exhibited that. I mean, he may have a great deep understanding of what women voters in the United States want, but he's not been able to articulate that mm-hmm. in a way that can resonate with me. And I'm with you, Heather. I agree. Economics is a huge deal because we do have to have a roof over our head. I get that.
Yeah.
As a single mom, you know, as we are, it's like the number one priority, keep that roof over the head of the kids. So,
yeah.
Absolutely. But we can't really blame all that on presidents, right? We can't. And it's a complex issue. So I'm not really disagreeing with you at all about economics being a huge thing. But if you look at the acts that President Obama has signed that the Congress has put through, there's actually been quite a bit of work done on it. Connie, so you brought up the housing issues. But once we went into this recession, President Obama had few choices, right? We had what we called the bailout time, you know. And if the U.S. government hadn't bailed out all those major corporations, how many more thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people would be without work?
Yeah, but you're saying that, you know, we can get billions of dollars to other issues but not bailing out corporations that provide jobs for people.
No, I say we should. We should have done that.
Oh, we should have. Okay.
Absolutely.
Jump in here with a voice of reason.
Yeah.
With a with a voice of reason.
You're going to be the mediator here.
Well, you know, I am deeply concerned and disappointed with our economy. We have been in a major recession for the last 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I am not an economic type person. I mean, I don't really understand all of the incredible amount of details that goes into our economy. I wish I knew more about it. I know how it's impacted people around me, you know, losing jobs, homes, and people, you know, especially survivors that I've been working with. I mean, our economy is, I mean, you have to have your basic needs met. That is for sure.
Yeah. And right now there's so many people, you know, who have lost homes, who've had to downsize. I know even at my day job here, we had to take a cut in pay. You know, I mean, it's affecting everyone. And to me, that's just, you know, Maslow's hierarchy. You know, until your basic needs are met, you can't go on to the higher, more principled needs and meet them.
What I'm concerned about is, what I'm deeply concerned about is the movement that we have made in the last how many years with regards to women's rights to choose, you know, all of the really important issues that Obama has supported with regards to women in the workforce and healthcare reform, the fact that, you know, a part of me is just thinking, wow, we're going backwards. I mean, why do we have to give that up? That's what I'm feeling. Like, why would I have to give up all of my rights as a woman, equal pay, the right to choose, for the sake of
our... Why would you think you'd have to give that up if Mitt Romney were president?
I just don't... He doesn't believe in abortion at all.
I don't believe in abortion. But I don't care if you have one.
Well, I think
he
does.
He's entitled to his belief without saying that he's going to change, you know, make a law for everybody in the country.
Heather, he's on record as saying that.
He's on record as saying that it should be the state's decision.
He's on record saying he's going to remove all funding for Planned Parenthood, which is not only birth control, it's also health.
Women's health, Okay, I'll give
women's
you that
health
one.
And, yeah.
I'll give you that one, Deborah.
Women's
He's on record for saying that.
Women's
health in general. It's just not about your right to choose, but just the woman's right in general. And, I mean, just, and I don't want to pick on any one particular debate that they had, but I think the thing that resonated with me the most, and I know it was a total, to me it was a very insensitive comment that he made about a woman full of binders.
Is he the only guy who doesn't have names of potential candidates and potential experts in a binder somewhere?
I think that I agree with Pinkley. I think it was insensitive the way he stated it.
Okay.
It may not be what he totally believes, but the way he stated it, you got to admit, Heather, comes off a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I'll definitely give you that Obama's a much better communicator than he is. However, doesn't mean he's not going to make good decisions if he's president.
Well, just listen, ladies and our listeners. I did a little bit of research on Obama versus Romney 101, the 5 differences on women's issue. And with regards to health care, it says in this, and this is actually quoted from the Christian Science Monitor. So have that be what it is. I do.
Okay. It is a liberal publication.
It is. And,
yeah, it leans that way.
It does, and that's okay for me because I proclaim to be a feminist Christian. So, all right,
uh-huh.
For whatever that means, we can get into talk about that too.
That'll be the next show.
But it says, it goes on to say, Romney also supports eliminating federal funding of Planned Parenthood because some affiliates provide abortions, though not with federal money.
Okay, did he say that he would eliminate funding to Planned Parenthood specifically because of the abortion issue?
Romney, let me go on, as it says, quote, Romney does not oppose the use of birth control, but when he abandoned his support of abortion rights in 2005, that had implications for the birth control issue. He says he supports a constitutional amendment stating that life begins at conception, and because some forms of birth control, such as intrauterine devices and morning after pills, prevent implementation of a fertilized egg. Some social conservatives believe they cause early miscarriages and should be banned.
Ooh.
Now, I work with rape survivors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me just resonates a really, you're taking a woman's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're saying that he vetoed an emergency contraception bill. It goes on to explain the drug the bill authorized would terminate life after conception.
Mm. So and those are his words or the monitor's words?
Well, they're reporting it. They don't have it in quotes, but they're reporting that. That is his, I mean, a six-page document that just briefly highlights in an outline form, number one, health care, number two, contraception.
Yeah, I saw that one too, yeah.
Number three, abortion, number four, equal pay, and number five, domestic violence. Now, we can go on and talk about domestic violence and the VAWA Act, which is for our listeners, the Violence Against Women Act, which funds programs addressing domestic violence, which has enjoyed long-term bipartisan support. But then this year, its latest round of reauthorization, it has hit a snag. This is in part because the Democrats have expanded coverage to include gay, lesbians, illegal immigrants, and Native Americans.
How do you respond to that, Heather? I mean, that's a tough one.
Well, he did vote for VAWA, did he not?
Yeah, now let me go on and say this is a bipartisan bill, right?
Yep.
Conservative Republicans object to the expanded version protecting for same-sex couples and illegal immigrants, which in the later case could provide access to temporary visas. The bill is now languishing in Congress. And when I say languishing, that's a very strong word. It is. And what it says here, it goes on to say, Mitt Romney has said little about VAWA or domestic abuse in general. In April, the Romney campaign said the candidate supports reauthorization, but did not endorse the expanded Democratic version.
Well, do you have no sympathy for that? I mean, there are a lot of people who don't necessarily, either because of their religious beliefs or whatever, who don't support. I mean, right here in Washington, we're facing that issue. A lot of states are facing that issue. I personally don't give a hoot if anybody wants to get married. But it is nevertheless a touchy issue. And throwing that into VAWA, it might be a deal
Native
breaker
Americans?
For some people.
What about Native American people?
No, that's true. Okay. Okay, you got me, Pinkley.
Yeah, I think it boils down to the discrimination piece for me, is we need to be inclusive in all of our government programs and projects and spending so that there's equity for everybody who lives in the United States, right? That's
right.
Where I'm coming from. I don't think you should... I like everything up to the point where people who are different than me, I like it up to that point, but you put these people in here who are different than me, and now I'm going to fight you tooth and nail.
Yeah.
And really, VAWA, I mean, it should have been authorized last year.
Yeah.
It should have been approved last year before the end of the congressional session, but it didn't. It got put back. And
a lot of that, Deborah, was because of the men's rights issues.
Right.
Yeah,
This is really in the congressional hands right now. It doesn't have much to do with the presidential candidates right now, because there's not a lot they can do about it unless they have the ability to vote on the, you know, proposed legislation.
Yeah.
I would just say that violence against women is a, you know, and I know you agree with me on this, Heather, that it knows no boundaries, that affects everybody, whether you have the GED or the PhD, right?
Exactly.
Or whatever the color of your skin may look like, or whatever religion you practice, we know that it crosses all boundaries.
Yes, absolutely.
And so
we all can agree on that.
I think that's, for me, that's a top priority with my legislators, and this next, when they come back, that they have got to pass Violence Against Women Act.
They are getting a lot of pressure from the men's rights groups who are saying you need to include men in that. These groups that push this idea that there are as many men abused as women in domestic violence situations, which is, you know, not true at all, but they have a very, very vocal and a very strong lobby. And they're the ones that are trying to interfere with VAWA as well. And I just want to throw that in there. Hey, people out there that are listening, please call. Give me some support or join the arguments here. 646-378-0430. We also have our chat line where you can post a question. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Deborah, can I throw in something?
Of course you can.
One of the big important things to us as anti-domestic violence advocates is the court system, and it certainly is a big thorn in my side, our court system. One of the things that I heard in doing my research is I heard a response from Mitt Romney in 2008 to one of these men's rights guys who was asking him a question at a forum, and this guy was saying that, you know, innocent men are being punished by restraining orders just because some woman goes down and fills out a form and says something and blah, blah, blah. And it was clear the questioner wanted Mitt Romney to say something about all these innocent men and what he was going to do to protect these innocent men who were getting protection orders thrown against them. And Romney, now I grant you, he's not exactly a terrifically animated guy, but he did say that, you know, I mean, he did the standard politician's thing about, oh, nobody should be falsely accused, ha, ha, ha. But he did say that he believes that judges should be periodically reviewed based on their decisions. And he said he was not familiar with any such case where a man was falsely accused. And he also said that the absolutely first thing that we should look at is the health and safety and interests of the child in these issues. And that's a real plus for me.
Yeah. That's one statement out of how many?
Oh, come on, Deborah, give me some things. I've given you some things. Come on.
Well, I'll chime in there. I mean, nobody would disagree about the best interest of the welfare of the child. Mm-hmm. But my first thought goes to you can't take care of a child unless you yourself as a mother are safe and feeling protected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I didn't see anything in his issues. And it kind of bugs me, I suppose, because the economy and even me saying that, you know, my vote is based on the economy, it still bugs me that some of these other issues, like domestic violence, haven't even come to the fore at all.
Right, right.
With either candidate.
Yeah.
And that really bugs me because, you know, what is it, 1 in 4 women in this country will experience domestic violence in their lifetime. 1 in 4.
Well, I think that the media and the candidates have a lot of power because they shape the conversation. I mean, there's a lot of groups that are disappointed by the debates between the two main people running for president because they didn't bring up, like, our climate, you know, our conservation concerns or issues, or, you know, our dependence on oil. You know, they didn't bring up a lot of things like that that all do have a lot to do with economy and safety and freedom in the United States. So, you know, I can't, Yeah, this year I can't say that either candidate has done a really good job of talking to the concerns that most citizens have as their top priorities, I'd say.
And I just I want to throw out our phone number, 646-378-0430. We'd love for you to jump in and give us some information about what you think and what your priorities are in this presidential election. Meanwhile, let's take a 30-second spot here, Deborah, and you have a message that you'd like to give our listeners, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. We, as an individual who I've told you I'm a survivor of domestic violence, recently lost my position at a community-based program, eliminated due to funding. So I'm recreating the way I do my anti-violence work, and I'm coming from a completely positive point of view, and I'm working on empowering strategies. So to that end, we have a sister radio show that occurs on Sundays at 7 p.m., and the name of that is called Deborah Says, S-E-S, which is Self-Empowerment Strategies. And our topic of conversation is how can we reclaim the power within ourselves? And this is a great show, I believe, for anybody who's experienced domestic violence, sexual violence, trafficking, and all the things that we forget are forms of violence, such as being a victim of a natural disaster, war causes violence to happen to you if you're the soldier, or if you've lost a loved one due to war, all these things. I think that there must be no human being in the United States or in the world in general that has been untouched by some form of violence.
Yeah.
So, and anytime that happens, we get an issue and a concern we get to work on. And so I would like to invite you to join my, Deborah Says, on Sundays at 7 p.m., it's Pacific Standard Time, and it's here on Blog Talk Radio, and its name is Debra-Ses, and come join me tomorrow at 7.
Okay, thank you. Pinkley, we have, between Deborah and I, we've kind of talked over you on a lot of things here. Do you have something you want to throw out for consideration?
Oh, no, I don't feel like you've talked over me at all. I've been a really good listener and jumped in when I've had a point of view. So I appreciate your concern on that. But, no, you know what's interesting is I'm just kind of looking at the websites for both of them. And actually, I've not been able to see anything, unless I've missed it, on Romney's page about issues around women. And Obama's page definitely has his website. Has women as part of his issues. So I just want to point that out. The other thing is Mitt Romney's 5-point plan. Can you talk a little bit about that, Heather? I guess let me put my point of view out there very clear. My concern and the difference that I see between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama is the reality of working, middle class, people who live in poverty, people who have so-called pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, and the idea that everyone can make it in America, which, in my opinion, is a total misuse of the ideas around being an American. You could be a person working every day in a job and not make enough to make your house payment or even pay rent. I think that Obama is grounded in more of a reality-based experiential, what it is to come from a home or come from an environment where you do have to, where he understands what it's like to live in poverty or to be a working class citizen.
Well, can I ask why? Why does he understand?
Because I think he's had the experience of it. I think that
as a child, he had a single mother household, and they lived with his grandparents in Hawaii.
But he is a very wealthy person.
Yeah,
well, how you define wealth. I mean, that's another issue I have with all these discussions is what they're saying is middle class is wealthy to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I thought I was middle class, but I'm either working class or poor.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you can't just talk about middle America then in those terms, because that's not the majority of people that live in the United States.
Yeah, I guess that's my point. I think Deborah is highlighting more of the point that I'm trying to make. I'm talking about experiential. I don't think, and it's not of Romney's choice. He was raised, brought into this family, but if you go back and research how he was brought into a family, they were already rich. He doesn't have any experience about what it is to be a working class person. And I think our class systems have changed.
Mm-hmm.
You're either poor, you know, the working poor, or the poor that doesn't have a job, or you're middle class, which in my opinion is are people that are just barely making things ends meet. And so Mitt Romney's plan for a stronger middle class on his 5 points, even that statement rubs me the wrong way. Mitt Romney's plan for a stronger middle class. What does that mean, middle class? I mean, to me that's classist. It has no grounding in reality for me. Now, it doesn't mean that he's not a good business person. And his father wasn't a good business person. I mean, I think that's great. And I have no objections to that. It's just not grounded in the reality that I can relate to.
Well, I think that may be true, too, of I'm not sure about Ann Romney's upbringing.
Background.
Well, you know, family and all that. But we know Michelle Obama's family was probably working class, not middle class, because they're saying middle class is people who, make $250,000 a year?
What reality is that? What?
I'm like, whoa, I'm so far from that. I should be on welfare, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it comes back to I can't make these other things happen if I can't keep the roof over my head. You know, I just can't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, it's like I said before, with my home budget. I mean, I can think of many things that I would like to help fund. I would like to help fund more anti-domestic violence issues, more cancer research. I'd like to help fund more education in certain areas that I feel like in our country is lacking. There are many, many, many things that I would like. I'd like to take a vacation, and I can't do it.
So how would that change for you? I mean, I'm just curious. Really, educate me, Heather.
I gotta tell you that I grew up pretty darn poor. You know, so I have that in my background as well. I've never been a particularly privileged person when it comes to the bottom line. But to me, if I can't, it just comes back to that Maslow's hierarchy. If I can't meet my expenses, my basic expenses, then I can't go on and do the higher level things because it's just not there. And I don't see how it's any different in our country. If we're not meeting our bottom line expenses, how can we possibly fund all this other stuff? I mean, I think we should look at running our country a little bit more like we run our homes. If we don't have the money, we don't have the money. And yeah, we might take out a loan, but there's a limit to how much loaning you can take. I mean, they just won't loan you if you have a certain amount of debt. And so I think that until we get that back, you know, this back on our feet economically, not only as a country but also as individuals, I just don't think we can look at some of these other issues. And, yeah, you know, I mean, you know that I don't disagree with you guys on VAWA. I don't disagree with you guys on abortion.
Sure.
I don't disagree, you know. But it's just a matter of the bottom line. If I don't, you know, what good is my interest in those issues if I can't keep my roof over my head?
Yeah. Connie Sue, did you find President Obama's top five for the plan for the next year?
He has them. I know he does.
Yeah, I have it on my screen right here. And
well,
I don't know what Mitt Romney says, so.
Okay, well, why don't I do Mitt Romney and then you do Obama?
Okay, so what's the number one?
Okay, so his five-point plan. Where did it go? Do Obama and then I'll find it.
Okay, so Obama's first one is create 1 million new manufacturing jobs by 2016. That's his top one. You want me to do all five of them while you're looking?
Well, yeah. I wouldn't do them one at a time.
Yeah, did you
find
it?
Because I think they're at a similar level. Mitt Romney's number one is to achieve energy independence by 2020.
Okay.
So we're talking about, both of those issues are talking about making our country more self-sufficient.
Okay, so let's go to number two. President Obama says, train 2 million workers by investing in community colleges.
Okay.
And Romney is the skills to succeed. It says he doesn't give any numbers on this. And the first one was energy independence. I'm looking at the one pager highlighted version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Number three.
Yeah. Number three. President Obama says give tax breaks to companies that invest in America.
Okay. And Mitt Romney says champion small business. Small business is the engine to job creation, which is true
okay.
in this country.
So number four is President Obama says double American exports.
And Mitt Romney says number two, trade that works for America. Trade can offer enormous opportunities for America. This is why he will work to open new markets for American goods and services while also confronting nations like China that cheat and trade and steal American jobs. So, again, pretty similar there.
Okay. Number five, President Obama has cut our oil imports in half by 2020 and invest in clean energy. So that was Mitt's number two, or number one.
Number one, yeah.
So what's Mitt's number five?
Well, his number four is cut the deficit. His number five was champion small business.
Oh, okay.
So he wants to reduce the size of government, and I guess this is the real key here to where I do agree with him, that this number part four. Part four is to cut the deficit, reduce the size of government, and get the national debt under control so that Americans remains a place where businesses want to open up and shop and hire. And I think that that's, that's the basis of the Maslow's hierarchy. You know,
one of my thoughts on that, Heather, and this, again, we can't leave this solely in the hands of the presidents or the candidates, but is if we were to cut the deficit by cutting all social health and services in the United States, do you not think that that is going to have a major impact on a recession?
I think it already has.
But I think, don't you think it would get worse?
No.
You don't think it can get worse?
No, I'm a real. I know that if I have more disposable income, if I'm not taxed as much,
mm-hmm.
then I have more money. I can go out and either hire. I have run a small business where there's been, I would say, five employees, maybe six tops. So I'm fully aware of all the rules, regulations, taxes that a small business person has to operate under, and it is staggering. It's staggering. And so for me, you know, if we can bring this under control, really promote, you know, cut businesses, the taxes on business, because, yeah, even the big guys. And, you know, there are going to be big guys that take advantage of the system, blah, blah, blah. But for the small businesses, which is the backbone of our country, you cut those taxes, you get them back to where they can actually have a profit, then they can pour more money back into the community, either by buying their yachts or buying their, you know, I mean, whatever it is, they are plugging that money back into the economy, either hiring people or buying more stuff, which in turn creates more jobs. And so I think, and in fact, under John Kennedy and under Ronald Reagan, they did that. They cut taxes and it worked. It was
Infographic that I found about President Obama. Let me get to it. But my point is, Heather, is that reducing the deficit in the United States cannot be on the backs of the poor. It cannot be on our most vulnerable citizens. And that's what I'm talking about when they say cut deficit. They look right to our social services and human programs, right?
Yes, exactly.
And so you are, I too have run a business. I was the director of the community-based nonprofit for 2 years. My budget went from $1 million down to $650,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I had to let staff go. We had to reduce services, but while the level still remains at the same.
Yeah, so or greater.
Or greater. So that's my issue, is how can politicians, if they're going to reduce the deficit, do it in a way that's not on the backs of the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
I would love to hear a plan like that. Nobody ever talks about that.
Well, I think that's why we need more women in government. Women know how to operate a budget. They know how to run a household. And if you can run a household, you can run the government.
I found a comparison of presidents' spending in the past, say, 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
And the annualized growth of federal spending, Reagan in 82 to 85 was 8.7 annualized rate of growth. And then the next highest one was George Bush II in 06, 09, and he did 8.1 percentage of annualized growth. And you know how much Obama's annualized growth of federal spending is from 2010 to today? 1.4.
Okay, so tell
me Obama is not increasing our federal debt at the same rate that, you know, our predecessors did.
I don't understand that. Give me those numbers again.
Okay, annualized growth of federal spending.
Okay.
Reagan in 82 to 85 was 8.7.
So he increased at 8.7%.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Reagan 86, 89 increased it another 4.9.
Okay.
Bush 1, the daddy Bush, 90 to 93, increased federal spending 5.4.
Okay.
The first year of Clinton was 3.2.
Okay.
The second term for Clinton was 3.9.
Okay.
G.W. Bush, 02 to 05, was 7.3.
Uh-huh.
And 06 to 09 was 8.1, which is almost as high as Reagan in 82 to 85.
Yeah.
And then President Obama, 10 to today, is 1.4.
How, then, is it possible that our national debt has almost quadrupled in the last 4 years?
Well, the federal, I don't know. You know, I can't tell you that. But we'd have to do a lot more research on that. I'm just saying that if you look at it in president's increase of federal spending, it looks like our Republican forefathers were the ones who did the most increase of federal spending.
Okay.
So Bush, too, G.W. Bush, had a pretty high annualized growth of federal spending the last 8 years.
In all fairness, he was fighting, you know, he was pouring money into the war on terror.
Okay.
President
Obama is the one who put an end to that.
Yeah.
And his federal spending is down, is only 1.4.
Now, see, I don't understand that. I would like to really see that statistic and see it compared to other things, because I don't understand how that can be when our national debt, as I said, has quadrupled, almost quadrupled. So how could it be that he's spending less and almost quadrupling the national debt? That just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think it's the spending. It's not it's the increase of spending. So we're already at the same rate that we had with President Bush, right? We're already at that whatever number that 8.1 increase in spending put us at, right? This is how I look at it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You're befuddling me with those statistics because they're not registering. It's not making sense to me.
Muddling my statistics, perfect friend. All right. Well, that's one way to look at it, and we know that. That's just one way. We both know statistics can be analyzed however you need them to be analyzed.
Yeah. Do you know smokers have more facial wrinkles than other people? Yeah,
what?
Seriously. So does that mean that smoking causes facial wrinkles, or do people who are prone to facial wrinkles smoke more? I mean,
well,
statistics can tell you anything you want to interpret them to be.
Exactly.
those.
If you look at lived experience, I would go with smoking causes wrinkles.
I would say they're codependent. I don't know. But anyway, you know what? I have absolutely enjoyed this discussion. And I got to say, Deborah and Pinkley, you got me on a couple things. But please concede something to me. You got anything that you're going to give to me?
Oh, well, I think part of Mitt, in my opinion, part of, you know, candidate Mitt Romney's issues is that he's not, if he's as intelligent as I think he is, he doesn't articulate that very well.
Now, how is that giving me a point?
Well, I'm saying I think he's got it, mm-hmm. but I don't think he can articulate it well. And I also feel like he's a little bit, to the public, I feel like he's a little bit back and forth, just a little bit.
The thing that I dislike about him is that smarmy expression he has, you know? But I also got to tell you, Obama, that gets me too, when they're always photographing him looking up toward the heavens, you know, and I just start thinking, oh my God, people, can we just have a conversation, you know?
So, one, Pinkley, are you there?
I'm here. So, Heather,
yeah, go ahead.
One concession, I mean, I don't even know if it's a concession. I agree with you about our economy.
Yeah.
It has to turn around. It has to. And, you know, they're even talking about a potential second recession.
I don't think it's the second. I think it's the same one.
The first one hasn't ended yet. Yeah.
We're kidding ourselves if we think we came out of it.
Yeah.
So it could be like just, you know, whatever. First, second, depression. I mean, the economy has got to turn around. And
it does for sure.
I commend you and have great respect for you for standing your ground on what you believe in. I do. I feel very strongly about that with anyone, and that we're able to have these conversations that we can agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And I think that whoever is elected, it's such a tight race right now. I agree that we have to have our needs met. And maybe just for our callers, you can talk just real quickly about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Just go through those real quickly.
Oh, explain that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, if you can picture a pyramid with the point at the top,
right.
Maslow was some psychologist who decided that up at the top are these higher level things like self-actualization and self-confidence and all these other things are at the top, at the little tiny point. And if you don't have, at the base are things like being able to eat, clothe yourself, house yourself. And between those two, you have all these different needs to be met, okay, all going from the basic to the most esoteric. And so his contention was that you can't get to the top of the pyramid. You can't get to self-actualization or, you know, finding yourself or anything like that until you have that base. If you don't have those basic needs met, you're never going to be able to get to some of those higher things.
Which includes safety. A person has to feel safe.
Safety is a very important one.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that, you're not going to be able to get up to the higher levels. And I guess that's kind of what I was saying about the economy, because, you know, I don't disagree with you guys on women's issues and with especially domestic violence and violence issues, but I do believe that we have to have that foundation reestablished and solid in this country in order to fully meet some of those other higher-level needs that we certainly have. Deborah,
I think as we wrap up our show today, that we didn't even talk about Roseanne Barr. She's running for president, too, you know.
Give us your quote, Deborah.
She's on 13 states' ballots, I heard. So it's possible she could give them a run for their money.
Really? Oh, boy.
We usually end
Deborah,
with...
Tell us your quote for the week.
Our quote is, if you get the inside right, the outside will fall into place.
Oh, I love that one. I love that one. Hey, everybody out there, you know, please join us next week, 10 a.m. Pacific time, and we have certainly enjoyed our discussion today. And, yes, we are still going to be friends, aren't we, ladies?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love you both.
Yeah. And we can agree to disagree, and that's because we are...
Three women.
Three ways.
Three divas.
Hey, remember to vote. Don't forget to vote. Thanks for listening today.